You need a bad operation. Give me the scissors. Hammer. Flame.
It's a daily operation. Cubicle.
Operating correctly.
The time is 5 p.m. and now you're leaving your cubicle.
Operating correctly.
It's a daily operation. Cubicle.
Operating correctly.
The time is 5 p.m. and now you're leaving your cubicle.
Operating correctly.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Operation Cubicle. This is episode 152, and the topic for this show is getting ahead without being promoted. Now, this is the show where we take one topic and we look at it from both the corporate and geeky sides. I'm Asian Jackson, broadcasting to y'all live out of Milwaukee, and joined as usual by my wonderful co-host, JP Fairfield. How you doing, JP?
Hey, what's up, what's up, what's up?
Hey, I almost went into like a little OPP.
I
really hope that they get some kind of royalties off that. Like they probably don't. Like, it's probably like the record label, because literally every sporting event I've ever gone to plays that.
That would be nice.
Like, if they everyone did.
Right,
everyone, especially basketball games. I mean, basketball games might play it more than once. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's crazy. You know, so how was your day today?
Well, I'm just gonna say that Lemonade album and Prince saved so many lives today. So many lives. It's ridiculous. So I had to travel every week to like somewhere in Michigan. And so since I don't want to take a plane, because that's ridiculous for me to spend 4 hours in the airport when I could just spend that 4 hours, you know, getting more hours of sleep and then 2 hours of traveling by train. So apparently Amtrak decided that they was going to change the time of my outbound train. Now, mind you, they told me that coming back from Michigan that one of my scheduled trains was canceled. Okay, cool. They did not tell me that the same thing happened to the train going to Michigan. So I get there and the gate is closed and I was like, but it's not 7:20. It's not 7:20 yet. Like, I got 20 more minutes. Like, 20 minutes is here and I have it. And they say, no, it left 10 minutes ago. I was like, wait, what?
So, like, they just didn't send you a notification, like, email or
nope.
I don't know how they notify.
In fact, most of the people who was working the trains did not know till that morning when they got calls telling them to come in early.
Wow.
Yeah.
So Amtrak is just a shit show at that point.
Because apparently they're doing construction on part of the track. So, like, and I thought, okay, maybe I could take, you know, a 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock train. That was canceled. So, I don't even know what people had that 12:30 train, but they're going to be mad when they get down there if they didn't get a call to talk about it got canceled. Because all the trains were canceled and the only one that was going out was like around 4:30 or something. Mm-hmm. I was like, seriously? And not even your own workers, your own employees knew about this.
Yeah. I mean, was this some kind of like emergency train hardware thing? Like, did they say anything about
it? No. They was doing construction on the tracks, which was scheduled. And I guess the new schedule change wasn't supposed to happen until the 29th of April. You know what today is? It ain't the 29th. I know that much.
I know it's not the 29th because that's my brother's birthday. And if it was, I'd be pretty pissed at myself. I'd be like, oh, shit.
So I end up, luckily, the person who was at the customer service desk for Amtrak was a freaking rock star. So she was awesome. Okay. And she was like, I'm not going to lie to you. We ain't even know ourselves. I'm not going to even lie to you.
I love when people are that honest, you know? I mean, she's probably like, I don't get paid enough to lie to you, so this is what the deal is.
Right. She was so straight up with me, which I appreciated, because honestly, that calmed me down a lot more than the can, well, ma'am, your ticket says no, my reservation says this, and the ticket decided to spit out different numbers. So you can do that, what my ticket say, but when I gave you my money for that reservation, what did that say? We ain't gonna talk about that. So I had to take a Greyhound one way down here because I wasn't taking no 4:30 train and getting here like after 8 p.m. because like those late trains just be slow as all get out.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds ridiculous. Yeah, I'm sorry your travel has been a little crazy.
Yeah.
Now, since it was that crazy, do you actually get work done on the train? Like, do you try to work, or is it more of a just chill and kind of decompress?
Well, usually when I get on an Amtrak train, I try at least work for an hour, and then the other hour I kind of decompress because it's like a two-hour to an hour and a half. But usually I'm more likely to get to do work when I'm coming, when I'm leaving Michigan, because the outbound train is like at 7:20 a.m. So I'm tired and I'm sleepy and I want to just nap. But I couldn't really get any. Well, I got some work done today because I had to wait for the Greyhound bus to leave because it was leaving like in another hour and a half, so I'm like, well, since I'm here, might as well do, you know, a bit of work. So
look at you all dedicated. I love
I'm
it
not all I dedicated I was bored. And luckily my phone had like I still had like 2 gigabytes of like high speed like 4G. So I was bumping Lemonade, and I was like, this is saving all y'all lives right now.
Now, were you listening to it, or like, were you like watching the actual short film?
I was listening to
the visual album.
I was listening to it. I think if I saw the visual album, that would not have saved lives. I felt like I would just start standing on like the customer service desk and say, who the hell do you think I am? You know, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to, you know, I really didn't want to go out like that. But it would have happened if I saw the visual album. And then, like, you know, especially that part. My favorite part is when she's in that gorgeous yellow dress with the bat just smiling and destroying stuff. And I'm just like, that's exactly how I, like, phases of mad, that face when you're smiling and you're destructive, that's like peak madness. Like for me, like I like either like if I'm cussing you out, I'm not really that mad at you, but if I get to smiling, because first is I'm cussing you out, two I'm crying. Like, and people think like, oh my god, did I hurt your feelings? No, bitch, I'm thinking about killing you and all the trouble that I'm gonna have to do to hide your body. So I'm crying because I have to go through this crap to deal with you. And then if I get to smiling, that means I figured out a way to make it the easiest way to hide your body without inconveniencing me. And then when the smile is gone and I'm looking at you straight face and I'm calm, that means I'm about to do whatever I was smiling about. So
that means you've worked out all the details,
right?
And now you're ready to execution,
right? So that's how it was for me today. I was like, Lemonade and Prince save people's lives today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So absolutely R.I.P. Prince. I didn't get into Prince until I was probably a little older. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, for some reason, like, I always realized that he was a musical genius, but I didn't really vibe with a lot of the songs until I was maybe in my 20s or so. I don't know why that is. It just kind of hit me at that time of my life, and then I was like, this is great, and then I just started like really accumulating all the Prince stuff that I could.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was really, really sad till I hear him pass. Only 57 years old,
right?
Too, like,
so
like super young.
Yeah, because I only got a couple of his albums, like the early ones. I just went and got the hits albums a while ago, but now I'm thinking maybe I should just get each one individually, because the hits, like the hits compilation, you know, they don't really, you know, they get the best known song, so, and it's a couple of songs that I like from him that won't be on his compilation album, so I'm thinking maybe I should just go ahead and get, you know, the rest of the albums, just to fill out, because I got his later stuff. I'm never gonna find a Black album. My friend somehow got it, but I ain't gonna never find it, because he was right. Like, yeah, I ain't gonna find it.
Yeah. He is definitely, you know, he even though he's gone, he's definitely left a great catalog of like stuff that is gonna save lives, because as you said, like, you know, like he helped from you killing people today. Mm-hmm. And I can say that, yeah, I've been listening to like a lot of him as well in the past week, and there's been some stressful times at work where like I'm just like, all right, I'm gonna take a walk and I'm gonna rock some Prince. You know, till I get myself in like a better mood,
right? Yeah, so it was always weird, because I, like, same thing with me. I wasn't really into Prince when I was younger. Same thing with Michael Jackson. I wasn't like, I mean, I appreciate both of them when I was younger, but I wasn't like stan status then. Like, I was stan status for Janet Jackson, still am. So, like, that was my Patronus. Like, Janet Jackson was like my thing. So.
Yeah. See, I was definitely always a Mike fan. I just feel like Prince's music, and this isn't a bad thing, I feel like it's more grown, like it's less accessible. Like I feel like Mike's music is like you can listen to it at any age and still get it. Whereas I feel like Prince's, like, to really get it, like, I feel like you have to have some kind of like lived experience. You know, and like, I don't think that's like a negative thing or like anything. I just think that to me, like, I couldn't really, you know, really feel a lot of the lyrics until I actually had some kind of lived experience, you know, from like high school and college and all that stuff. So, you know, but yeah. And like, obviously Lemonade has been taking over everything, to the point where, you know, mainstream kind of publications that don't necessarily write about music, they all have articles about Beyonce. You know, some good, some are, you know, Piers Morgan terrible. But, you know, she is definitely getting those hits. And I must say, you know, I've become, you know, a fan of hers since she dropped that self-titled album. And I guess that was 2 years ago at this point. It was like 2014. So it was like a year and a half ago. But yeah, she's really grown so much as an artist. And now she's just using her platform to be like unapologetically Black in herself, and she just seems like she just running it, you know, and like she just like, this is me, this is who I am, this is my perspective, and you can listen if you want, but I'm not making sort of the kind of music that I used to make, and it's dope. It's like really inspiring to see somebody have all this power and just kind of using it exactly how she wants to. Like, I really have a lot of respect for her at this point. Not Birdman, like respect, though, you know what I'm saying? I don't have that respect on a name.
Put some respect on it.
Put some respect on my name. But yeah, I'm a big fan of her now. I almost feel like I want to go back and listen to a lot of her older music, because like I think the only album of hers that I had before the self-titled one was the one with Crazy in Love on it.
Mm-hmm.
But like I feel like there had to have be seeds for this kind of stuff in her earlier music, and I just need to.
Well, I mean, when she first came out, she was like 14 years old in Destiny's Child. So, like a lot of her stuff, you know, her earlier stuff is you know, I don't want to call it. It's not basic. It's higher than basic because it's some basic R&B. But she wasn't really in that category. But it wasn't really like. It was her, but not her. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, she probably wasn't even writing that stuff, you know, early on. Like, I bet, like, her dad or, like, whoever was, like, probably writing for all of them.
Or, you know, she was at a point, like, when you're younger, you really don't know yourself or don't understand how to self-reflect. So, and that could be part of it also, you know.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's like really cool to kind of see someone grow up. I kind of feel like the same way when Kobe Bryant like retired, and like I was like, man, I've seen 20 years of this dude from when he came in the league at, you know, 17 years old to now, and it's like to like see somebody grow up in the public spotlight is like.
Did he grow up? Did he?
Interesting. I guess there are some questions there.
You know what? Yeah, look, y'all can send me hate tweets. I don't care. I never been a Kobe fan, so whatever. Y'all can tweet at me how talented he is. I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't watching him play. So
hey, there are a lot of people that are not Kobe fans. I'm not a huge Kobe fan, but I definitely like respect him from a basketball perspective.
Right.
From a personal perspective, I think he's probably not a good person. I don't know personally, obviously.
Look, how many years it took him to pass a freaking ball?
Yeah, he is definitely, you know, he's like always had this reputation of being like kind of a jerk and being kind of like standoffish and that kind of stuff. You know, it's like the same stuff that they used to say about Jordan, you know. Like,
well, that was kind of true, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's like there's definitely a kind of personality type.
It was just that Jordan was like able to kind of hide it a little better than Kobe. Kobe was just I guess the one thing I could respect about Kobe that he just didn't give any damns that he, you know, people thought he was a jerk. I was like, I can respect that, you know, but Jordan kind of kept that, you know, somewhat on the slide, but, you know, until, you know, he couldn't keep it hidden anymore because it was like a well-known secret that like Jordan secretly is a freaking big ass jerk. So
yeah, and like I don't know if part of that is the era, maybe just because Jordan was playing before like social media and mm-hmm. all that stuff, where it was easier to hide your personal life.
Yeah,
you know, I don't I don't know if like they had kind of like Twitter in the 90s, you know. Well, first of all, my high school would be ruined, I feel like, if that stuff
was
out there.
Well, I think if it was more of Twitter and stuff back then, I think he would not be able to hide it. And like, he wasn't, you know, like Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley was like, you know, very upfront about his being a jerk at times. So like, Charles Barkley would be a loud jerk and he wouldn't care. So like, and you end up putting your focus on a personality like Charles Barkley versus Jordan, who kind of kept his jerk-tude a little bit on the side. So
yeah exactly, all that stuff with like Jordan gambling and all that stuff, I'm sure all that stuff would have been all over every piece of, you know, media and all that stuff, you know. But like it was a legit question while he's playing, like, is he doing this stuff or not? But like now it would just be like, hey, here's the picks. You know, so yeah, all right, cool. So yeah, that's That's some good lemonade slash slash print slash basketball talk. But we gotta get to the corporate shit. We gotta get to the show.
We got a shizzo.
If y'all want to follow the shows, you can go to operationcubicle.net. That'll bring you right to our Podomatic page, which has all of our shows that are currently online, which is about 50 or 60 of our 150 plus episodes total. There's also a donate link there, which you can also go to by going to operationcubicle.net/donate. So if you would like to help us get more shows on and just help us with the monthly hosting costs that we have to do to keep the shows that we do have up, definitely donate there as well. And you can tweet us at Operation Cube on Twitter. Email us operationcubicle@gmail.com. Our Facebook page is Operation Cubicle. And if you have a podcast reader and want to subscribe to the show and get the most recent episodes automatically delivered to you, you can go to iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, or a Podomatic itself, and just type in Operation Cubicle, and you should be a big subscribe button, and bleh, you will get it. JP, how can the people find you?
They can find me at jpfairfield.com. That'll tell you all the social networks that I'm on, such as Google Plus under the name JP Fairfield and Twitter under the name Isis, ISITIS. I'm also on another little podcast called Nagasm Noir Network at nagasnoir.net. So I guess that's a boom.
That's a boom.
That's a boom.
That's right. All right, y'all. So let's go into our musical break and be back with Getting Ahead Without Promotion. Once again, it's Operation Cubicle. Asian Jackson and JP Fairfield. See y'all soon.
I walk the night rhyming, I'm a bomber, nigga like a winter coat. Have him on death row searching for an endoscope. Yet I sparkle like Irene Cara, symbolized dope like sirens through terror. Mary, who just had a baby, someone else decapitated. Flashbacks and past raps make me so glad I made it. Players is getting traded. I drop a gem on them whose style is jaded. My juice is graded, shit is so banging, niggas say it's gang related. On philosophers, rink of thought. I've skated with precision. Cruises getting split like decisions. Comma, let it ride in collision. Vision like Coleco or Teller. I battle stars in stellar regions. My thought scheme is like my offspring. I was teething. My reason to rhyme applies to season and time. Season the mind, body, and reaches divine. And mine's cookouts. I'm leaving the swine. Verbal vegetarian. Squash beef with ice cube. Came in this rap life new. Now I'm fully clothed with flows. You tricks can't hide behind expensive cars and clothes. Old niggas I expose. Like Luke does hoes in videos. With classic material. Imperial and rugged like. Got mag, but my slug's a mic. You fake like a smile, like a hug, I'm tight. Skip ladies, this is Ripple, motherfucker night. Oracle air outs, niggas don't even run for cover right. Downtown, interracial lovers hold hands. I breathe heavy like an old man with a cold pair to old style. Hold a stone out profile, mixed between Malcolm X and Seth when I go wild. Hold mics like a second nothing to the second coming. Humming coming towards you, with power like forests do. Hip hop, you my bitchin' like a Ford, I'm exploring you. Some whack niggas be cool with them, I stay cordial. Flow at room temperature, catches presume miniature like golf. Soft like Tiger Woods, at real nigga angles I've stood. With ways to geometric, don't need to rob banks with dyke bars to set it. I levitate to the occasion, lounge like a lyricist. Rhyme wise, you a rest haven. You sat by the door, spooked like I was Wes Craven. You need to do more deleting and less saving. Appraising hell, raising heaven as the bill on my page 11. What you should have known from day one, you will on day seven. Seven, seven. Yeah, yeah.
Hungry hip hop junkie in the city. Hungry hip hop junkie in the city.
Looking at the clock, hoping for the day to fly by, so I ask myself why I'm doing this remedial work for second graders. I'm an educator with mega flavor, so maybe I should just jump up and get ill. Maybe I should let these people know they're being killed. Maybe I should try my very best to chill and get paid, cause I gotta pay bills.
Cause I'm at it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Operation Cubicle, episode 152, Getting Ahead Without Being Promoted. Agent Jackson and JP here. So we just got through the intro talking about some music and some sports, and now we are, you know, going to talk about our topic today, which you found in the Telegraph, you know, UK magazine, and the name of the article is Career Advice: How Can I Get Ahead at Work Without Being Promoted? And it's written by Louisa Symington Mills. And I thought that, like, this was a really dope thing because, you know, of the people that I've talked to in my working time, a lot of people are either stuck at jobs where they feel like they can't kind of advance, or they can advance, but they don't necessarily want the additional, like, responsibilities of being promoted. And there are some people that, you know, that have kind of like no problem with, like, moving up the chain. But I think that that's kind of like the default. And not everybody kind of feels that way. And I feel like the people that don't feel that way are, like, often kind of ignored. So the person that writes in here says, I work in financial services and enjoy my job, but there are no near-term promotion prospects. The next step would be managing director, a huge leap that isn't likely to happen for several years. I still want to make progress in my role in the meantime. How can I get ahead without being promoted? So I guess before I get into the advice that Louisa shares, I want to ask you, JP, have you ever been in this situation where, like, you've been in a job and you know that the promotion is maybe years away, and, like, you kind of struggled to kind of make little steps in the years, like, before that promotion can actually happen?
Well, I guess for me, I don't really seek promotion. At the job that I currently have, they do have an outline of, you know, when you can expect around what time for promotions. So I guess it's like every 3 to 5 years, you know, you should try to get promoted depending on your rating. But I never really been worried about it because unless I get bored with my actual current job and whatever the promotion is gets me a different insight or different, you know, or more responsibilities that challenge me, then I'm not really worried about promotion. But what usually just happens is I get promoted and nothing really changes.
Really?
Yeah.
So, like, well, I'm assuming that your salary changes.
My salary changes. I don't think anything is really going to change until I hit the manager part of the career path.
Okay. So do you think it doesn't change because most of the time you kind of have to be already at that level before they promote you?
Yeah, pretty much, because I go project to project. So depending on the project needs, I might end up taking on more responsibility than my actual title requires.
Okay. But do you feel like, so I know that you mentioned that your job kind of has this, like, 3 to 5 year thing. Is there pressure that kind of says if you don't hit that you'll be viewed as some kind of, you know, it'll be a problem, or they'll view you as not, I don't know, not being a team player, or, like, whatever kind of BS that they'll come up with? Is that pressure there?
No, not really. Because they kind of make it clear in the career path that if you have a certain rating every year, so you're always consistent every year for 3 to 5 years, then you might get automatic promotion. It's just if you get above, like, the higher ratings, it'll happen faster. It's only the pressure only comes in if you are getting consistently below ratings.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. So definitely. I'm not really worried. I'm like, I look, if like, I'm not worried about promotions unless, you know, because I always get a raise in my salary without getting promoted. So I'm just like, I don't care.
Well, I think the thing is, though, that some people kind of run into, and I run into this, is if you don't get promoted, you might, you know, most positions have a salary band where there's an upper limit.
Right.
You can't pass. So if you're in a position for, you know, 3 years, unless you started all the way at the bottom of that band, you can't keep getting raises if you've been there, you know, say 4 years and you hit the top, unless you get kind of promoted, you know. So I feel like in that case, there's a lot of questions. Like it's like, all right, would I stay doing this at the same money? Do I need to look at other places, or do I need to look at the promotion? It's sort of like a couple of things. Like, I know some people, like, they're like, hey, if I'm making good money and I like the job, I don't care if I don't go up, you know, in salary. I know I've been like that at previous jobs where, like, I've been like, you know, I make a good salary and, you know, I don't want the extra stress that I see my boss kind of going through, you know, so I'll just chill here, you know, and just make this money. Definitely agree with, like, what you're saying about if you're having the low ratings, you definitely have something to worry about. But I think that that's less about worrying about the promotion and more about underperforming in your current position.
Right.
You know, so that's more about getting fired, you know, than getting up a promotion into another kind of position. But okay,
yeah, I guess it depends on how your company is set up, because I'm in a big consulting firm, so they have this long career path and I'm just like, whatever, I'm still gonna do the same work, except I might get more people under me or I might get more responsibility. It kind of like it's kind of really flexible in your responsibilities, because you're going, every project is like another job, so
right,
it's, yeah. But I think if I was in a smaller company, I'd probably be more concerned about it, because the, you know, the career path might be not as straightforward. So it really depends on your situation. You have to kind of look and just think about, okay, what are the barriers to me getting promoted in in how the company set up promotions. So
okay, yeah, no, that's definitely some good words. So let me share a little bit of how Louisa kind of responded to this. So she mentions, that each firm has their own strenuous criteria, and the reality is a pyramid grading structure where as many as 60% of those at a certain level won't ever progress. And yeah, this is something I always thought of too, because I think most companies are set up in kind of a pyramid structure where there's less people as you go up the chain. So I'm like, if there's, say, you know, 30 people at my level and 15 people at the next level, like, everybody's not going to get promoted. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, like, unless they're counting on a 50% yield rate where half the people leave, or people just stay. Like, I always wonder how HR companies make that, like, how do they come up with these numbers, like how many people they should have at each level? Because they can't promote everybody. I mean, I know that they do that at some kind of, like, lean organizations that have kind of, like, a flat org chart where there's not that many sort of levels of, like, hierarchy. Mm-hmm. But, like, but I don't think most companies, at least that I've worked with, are like that. So yeah, what do you think about, like, how they kind of promote all these people in these kind of pyramid things? Like, you think it's something where, like, they just count on a bunch of people bouncing, or they count on people just being happy and not wanting to be promoted? Or, like, do you think it's, like, something else?
I really think they're counting on, one, people bouncing. So I think that's the first thing. And two, I don't think they expect to promote everyone. But they do have metrics around how many people may leave per year. That's why it be they, you know, companies be slick by sending you the surveys about how happy are you at your job, because they kind of get the idea that some, if you have a percentage of people saying they're super unhappy, you know, at the end of the year, then you know that, okay, out of that percentage, some of those people who are unhappy are going to bounce. So I think they're depending on people bouncing.
I'm always worried about filling out those surveys too real, which I know kind of skews the like results, but I'll like definitely say if I disagree with something, but I'll rarely put like all the way bad, you know, because they usually have, you know, a 5 or 10 point scale that you can say like, how do you feel about, you know, management at the company or whatever?
And like I feel suck. Like,
yeah, I know. I mean, if you put the lowest one in everything, like I think that even though technically they, I think legally they might not be able to use that, but I feel like they'll find some way to call you in to like a meeting and says, so since you're so not happy here, we've laying you off, you know, or something like that. I don't know. It's like a bit of a worry that,
right? But I don't. Yeah. So they can't. Yeah, they have to be real slick about that, because if they do that, and you find out because you gave them a bad rating, that they can. I think you can get sued for that.
Yeah, I think so too. But you know, these companies do all kind of shady shit.
Right.
So I would not be surprised. Now, one point that she mentions that I didn't think of is that it could be harder for women than it is to men, with men to have these discussions about sort of being kind of promoted. And like she uses some statistics that are specific to the banking industry, but like I think that it's like also something that I've seen kind of repeated in like other articles as well, that like kind of touches on, you know, on the fact that, you know, that that there are a significant amount of like women that like feel like they don't have like necessarily the negotiating power to negotiate hard or to advocate for themselves, which is weird because it's not something I've really seen with the women that I know, which I know is like anecdotal evidence. But like it is something, you know, that like I've seen a lot, and like obviously that's where, you know, a lot of like the lean in stuff and like all that stuff has kind of come from in the past few years. So I mean, is that something that like you agree with? Is it something you've had personal experience with, or like do you think that sort of the gender difference between that is like kind of overblown a little bit?
No, I agree with it, because if you take into account the wage gap, a lot of that has to do with not having women in more senior positions. So even if you can get women in certain fields and pay them the same wages, the fact that they're not on the boards or in some kind of CEO position or CTO, whatever C and O with a letter in the middle that you can get, it's very unlikely for a woman to be put in that position in a lot of companies. So which does not help the wage gap, because you're promoting these males into these positions, but very few women can get up to the same level. And it has a lot to do with other factors also. You know, they feel because if it's a woman, they have to worry about, well, one day she might get married and pregnant. And
oh, Lord.
Yeah, that's, I guarantee to you, it may be 2016, but you still have people that think that way.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And also, and if the woman does have children and stuff like that, there's not good programs at some corporations for, you know, daycare and, you know, having a more flexible work schedule so you can pick up your child in a, you know, because they, if they get out at 3 or lower, you know, if you have a kid going in kindergarten, they get out at noon. So, like, and you have to drop work to, you know, grab your kid up and figure out where to put them for the next couple hours. So, it's a lot of factors that are barriers to women getting promoted. And it's this expectation that the woman should be the prime caregiver for the children. Like, they should be the ones that are doing all the, you know, picking up and getting the lunches ready and stuff like that. It's that also that expectation, because it could, you could easily have the same situation that happened with fathers, but
exactly,
our society puts that type of work and says, oh, it's better if a woman does it because she's a woman and she has boobs and a vagina, so she should do it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say is, yeah, like, I mean, there's plenty of dads out there that could be doing this stuff too, but, you know, it's just not the same social pressure, not the same sort of remarks from the job. So you have a kid now. Does that mean that you're going to be working less? You know, like, I'm like, mm-hmm. I doubt that conversation happens as much with guys, probably ever with guys, as it does right. with like women that newly have kids.
Right. Because it was a cover situation where, you know, there was a father that, you know, that was that I worked with on my team who took a paternity leave. And no one batted an eye. So, you know, he had a newborn baby and, you know, he wanted to spend a month with their kids. And, like, I had, at least in all my situations, I had at least 3 times where a person who I was working directly with had to take leave. And how the woman is treated versus the man who takes the leave is totally different. So it's like, when it's a woman who has to take maternity leave, it's, for some reason, it's a bigger deal. Well, yeah. Probably because she has to leave out longer because her body literally is,
yeah, exactly.
You know, went through a war to safely deliver a child, so that's a big strain on your body, so of course they will be out longer, but it's made into a big deal. And then, you know, if a father does it, oh my god, you're such a wonderful father to do this, and I'm just like, well, they yeah. want to see their kid, so they want to
yeah. Yeah, it's always weird. Like, I always find it weird because I've seen, you know, and I know that, like, paternity leave is usually bad for dads. Like some companies, you get, like, a couple of days or something
like
that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
But at the same time, like, the same way that I see mothers, like, stack up their vacation days and do FMLA and stack all that stuff to get extra time off, I've known some guys where they haven't, and I'm like, if I had a kid, you damn sure I want to spend some time with the baby as soon as they're born. Like, I don't want to go back to work in 2 days. Like, like, the money situation would have to be really real for that to happen, because I'm like, yo, I'm saving up vacation days. Like, hell, I got 9 months advance notice. You know what I'm saying? So like, it's like, not like it's a surprise, you know? So, the paternity versus, like, maternity leave is, like, always a weird thing.
Yeah, they really don't give them a lot of time. I honestly think they should give at least half the time that they give women. So, like, I think most women get maybe 3 months.
Yeah. I think it's like 6. I think it's 6 weeks, but I think it's unpaid though. I think that's the only part of it.
Right. I don't know. It's different. Well, I think it's 3 months if they use their paid time off also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, But I do like, there's a program that they have where you can donate your pay time off to other people.
That's really cool.
So you could put it in a bank, and then people who need extra time, especially like if they don't have enough maternity leave, or if they're going through an illness, or they're going through maybe a illness in their family and they're the primary caretaker, then they can apply for that donation bank of paid time off.
Yeah, that sounds pretty dope. You know, that can also be of use, like, I guess, if, like, people wanted to, you know, if they're getting married, they want to take honeymoon time and that kind of stuff. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Yeah, I'll have to, I'm trying to think if any job I've had has had that. Like, I've definitely heard of it, but I don't think I've ever been at a place that has had that. But I definitely like the idea. It's like a very, very progressive idea. I like it.
Yeah, I think more companies should do something like that. Especially if you have a situation where at the end of the year, you lose a certain amount of your vacation time or your pay time off. Because what I would do, well, what I wish I did, because it was 1 year that I did lose some of my vacation hours, because you only can roll over a certain amount of time. This is when I found out about the donation bank, and I was like, oh, I wish I found out about this before, because I would just donate it, you know, the hours that I lost, that I was going to lose, you know, and I would felt like it would have got used even though I couldn't use it. So
yeah. I might ask my job now, but I mean, I'm a contractor, so I wouldn't be eligible for it. But I'm gonna ask them as if that's a benefit to full time people, because yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. That would definitely be a bit of a selling point to me, you know. So
yeah, because I really don't know why they don't advertise it more, because it's really a good program.
I like.
Yeah.
All right, so the author does give, you know, some suggestions on things that, like, you can do if that promotion is, like, way out, kind of like small things. So, like, she says kind of some of the things that, like, I would expect, like understanding what the selection criteria for the promotion is and making sure that you're doing that, having regular updates with your boss. I definitely recommend this. Don't rely on your boss to schedule time with you to update you on your progress. Like get a monthly or something meeting where, you know, I would argue you specifically organize your updates around the selection criteria for the promotion. And like, you don't have to tell your boss this, right? But like, you should be aware of, you know, sort of what those markers are for the next level, and make sure that any update that you give fits into one of those sort of buckets that they're looking for. So I think that, like, that's a like great idea. She also mentions finding the right sponsor and mentor, and I've never quite done this at a job, really. I mean, I've definitely had people that I've kind of looked up to and asked questions, but as far as like a formal mentorship, I feel like if you force it like that, it rarely works out, like, to have like sort of a formal mentor that you have like formal meetings with and you have documents and that kind of stuff. I feel like it almost has to be someone that you're already connected with in like some way that cares about you personally and wants to give you advice. So like, I haven't had that much luck with sort of the formal mentorship at work. Have like you had any luck with like getting like sort of like an official mentor or sponsor at work?
No, not really. I don't know. I'm probably, because I'm on that, I'm going to do my work and then I'm gone. So I don't know. It wasn't anybody who I clicked with enough that I wanted them to be my mentor. I really haven't found someone like that yet.
Yeah. And that, like, the clicking with, that's exactly what I feel like is lacking in these kind of formalized kind of programs. Cause they usually just say, hey, y'all are in the same like department and you've been here longer, be a mentor to this person. And it's like, that to me is not enough. Like, there has to be some kind of other relationship. Like, it can't just be like me just with random person that used to do my job. Like, because I'm not going to want to open up with them about like real issues or real challenges or frustrations or like whatever. So I find it pretty difficult. But then again, I know some people that do it all the time, and it's very easy like to them, and it's really helped them move up in their career because they have somebody that's like advocating for them. But I don't know. It's like something that I wish I was better at. But just has not happened for me. Yeah. So she also says, in the nearer term, there are other ways to increase the responsibility that you have, find new challenges, and source other opportunities for professional development, as well as creating more variety and complexity within your current job. Now, I think ideally that sounds great. I feel like that is something that goes directly into those meetings I was talking about with your boss, because, you know, like the variety and complexity in most organizations, it's up to your boss to really change your responsibilities, right? So like if like you have like formal goal setting or objectives or like the meetings, I feel like it's really good if you are kind of looking for that to come with a proposal to your boss instead of just like going like, hey, I need this to be more varied and more complex. If you think about it and you give them something to react to, I feel like most of the time, like your boss will be so impressed by the fact that you're proactive that they'll actually think about it. Like they might not agree, but they'll at least give it a chance, you know, because you kind of put everything like together and brought it to him or her. You know, so yeah, I definitely agree with like trying to vary things up a lot, and just making sure that your job doesn't become kind of stale, you know, because I think that is kind of the danger, in like a lot of companies that don't do a good job of giving their employees kind of different things to do every year, is that you might run into that situation where like, you know, you're really good at it and you're better at it, but it's really not bringing you joy and it's really kind of boring you a bit. And that's when I feel like a lot of people start looking, you know, at other positions because like they're like, yo, I'm bored. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's weird too, because when I was a kid, not my dream, but I used to always think about like, yo, I want to have a job where I'm bored and I can just chill and do nothing and get paid. Like I used to think that would be like the optimal experience. And now that's like the worst experience for me. If I was at a job, even if I was making great money and I was bored out of my mind, I feel like that would be so painful. Probably more painful than like being paid low at a job that I really love. Like I just like boredom to me now is such a strong kind of motivator to make sure that I'm kind of divvying things up and that kind of stuff, you know. So have you ever been in like any jobs where you felt like the lack of variety kind of caused you to like look other places, or like is the variety part not something that's really affected you in your career at this point?
It definitely has been situations where I had a job and I was bored to tears. I was like, can an asteroid come and take out this part of the building so I can have something to actually do? That's like when you start wishing for, you know, like
natural disasters,
right? You're really just, if I get to that point, then that means I really need to leave, because I shouldn't be wishing for natural disasters to stop the boredom. So,
that's, you know, it's time to go. Absolutely. Once you're wishing about asteroids,
right?
You know, that usually means that like you're gone. Yeah, I mean, I thought this was a pretty helpful article. I think, again, that, you know, one thing that I've learned, at least, is not to focus as much on getting promoted as I used to and just focus on being happy wherever I am. You know, so like whether I'm getting promoted every year or promoted every 5 years or like whatever, as long as I'm happy, I'm good, you know. Now, part of that happiness is, you know, making enough money to live too. I wouldn't be happy and not be able to pay my bills. But as long as that, you know, look like the salary works and I'm happy with the job, like promotion to me is almost secondary. Like I don't really care about titles or, you know, or like saying, hey, I got promoted.
Right.
You know, and that's it. Like, I'm just like, yo, if I'm happy, then I'm cool. You know, so that's just my view on it. Anything else you want to share out of this article or like anything in general about promotions or anything like that?
No, I pretty much agree with you on that the article was pretty good and had some really good points. And everyone's situation is different. So just being able to sit down and kind of have a pro and con and just really think, okay, for this promotion, will this make my work-life balance better? Will my days at work improve by having this promotion? Will it challenge me? Will I have to sacrifice a little bit more time at home? So you kind of have to think about that before you start obsessing about promotions.
Yo, that sacrifice time at home is so real right now.
Yeah.
Like, I used to do that all the time in my 20s. I would just work all the time, not care when I got home, not care how early I got up. I would travel all the time, like, I was rarely home. Now I'm like, yo, if I can get like an extra hour at home, I'm like thrilled, you know? And like, if like I have the like kind of job where I'm not constantly thinking about the next project, even when I'm off work, or I'm not bringing work home all the time, because I understand that it happens occasionally, but if I'm not bringing homework all the time, like that separation is so key right now. And luckily it's something that I'm experiencing in my current job, which is great. But I know that, you know, in the majority of jobs that I've had, you know, it starts to take over your personal life. And that to me is just a big no-no at this point. You know, I'm just not willing to deal with that anymore. So, you know, all right. Well, thank y'all for listening. Once again, operationcubicle.net, at Operation Cube on Twitter, Facebook, Gmail. Donate, all that stuff, and go to iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, Google Play, type in Operation Cubicle, get the shows delivered to your face automatically. JP, how can the people find you?
They can find me at jpfairfield.com, and there's the boom, and there's the sprinkle.
There we go. So, only way to end it. all right, y'all, we are out. See y'all next show. Peace. Can't wait to get on home, away from you, and be on the road. Turn off the TV and plug the phone, 'cause it's 5 o'clock and everybody's singing along. Bye 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 bye.